Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Is it still morning where you are?
It's actually still morning where you are, but I wish to say good evening for you guys.
Good early evening indeed. How's it going? Is it nice weather over there?
Yeah, it's a bit chilly, but it's sunny today, so we'll take it.
Yeah, it's a bit chilly and a bit rainy today over here. Horrible it has been. But then we get a lot of rain at the moment. Must be the climate change.
Yeah, that sort of thing is happening everywhere.
Certainly is. Ah, right. I've sent a message to the others to say what we'll call them, what I'll call them, or just bring them into the call as and when we're ready. So they're just sort of waiting with bated breath.
I'm bated breath as well.
Okay, here, you can bait your breath over here.
We're baiting breath all together.
Hey! Hello, Daphne.
Hello, darling. How are ya?
I'm fine. I'm very happy you've joined us. How's your pneumonia? You're going to get asked this question a few times because the others were very concerned last week.
Oh dear! Oh my goodness! I'm well. I mean, I'm still a little weak, but outside of that, I'm definitely on the mend. So
oh, that's
no worries.
Good for next week then.
Yes, very good for next week.
How long have you got, by the way? Just as a with us, I should say.
I've got an hour for you.
Wow!
If you want it?
Oh yes, definitely. Sold. Right.
All right.
Let's get some of the reprobates. I'll pre-introduce them before they come on. We've got Reese Parton, who's 17, 18. He never gives me his proper age. He's somewhere in Australia. He never gives me his proper exact markings in Australia. We've got Robert Haynes, who's another part of Australia, a couple of thousand miles away from Reese. Mary Lang, who's somewhere in the United States, in the middle-ish area. Can't remember where. But then I live in the United Kingdom, and it's all... it's all Skype to me. And Kirby Bartlett Sloan, who is sort of also... oh, I think I know where he lives. Hang on. No, I've forgotten. No, he lives somewhere in America too.
You're good at this.
Geography. I have got an O-level in geography, but yes. I'll allow them to explain later. I'll bring them in as and when, and just as they come in on this. Hang on, where's...
Awesome.
Add people. Here we go. Let's find one of them. They're all there waiting.
Great, right. Okay.
Don't be intimidated. Right.
Not at all. I'm not. I'm embracing the wide spectrum of geographical locations and loving everybody. So
it's sort of cosmopolitan, isn't it?
Yes, very.
Here we go. Here they come. Hello, Mary.
Hello. Hello,
hello. Hello, Mary.
Is this Daphne Ashbrook?
This is Daphne. How are you?
Oh, what a treat. I am fine. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you.
Hello, Kirby.
Hello.
Hi, Kirby.
Hi.
Hello, Reese.
Hello.
Hey, Reese.
And Robert, hope you're not eating at the moment.
I'm not eating.
Hey.
Is it like the middle of the night for Robert this time?
It's 3:02 in the morning.
So what time is it where you are then, Mary?
It's 2:00 or 2:03 in the afternoon.
Okay, good. All right.
Well, this is a program about some time travel TV series, so it does sort of seem right that we should ask everybody where they are and what time it is. I'm confused.
Yeah,
it's not appropriate.
Right, I'm going to do the intro to the show then, as everybody's there. And it seems that the others are behaving in an unusual way, which is rather worrying. So here we go.
Who's behaving?
Oh, that was a bit too soon. Wasn't it? Here we go. Right.
APP Services in association with Who1.co.uk presents the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast number 151. And with me this week, not in any particular order, are Robert Haynes.
Hello.
Reese Parton.
Ah.
You mean,
good morning, or evening, or afternoon.
Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
I'll explain later.
I'm sure you will.
No, you won't.
Mary Lang.
Hello.
And Daphne Ashbrook.
Hey!
And hello, Daphne.
Hello, darling. How are you?
I'm mighty fine, and I'm absolutely delighted you've been able to join us this week.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Now, I've given them a lot of head start with you being on the show, as once we had Louise Jameson on, and I didn't bother telling them until she was actually on the show, and they were all sat there all stunned and not able to ask any questions. So I'm hoping that this week...
I wasn't on then. I was in hospital, thank you.
He comes up with these excuses, Daphne.
Well, that's why you were quiet.
Mary was in hospital too.
Well, first of all, I want to know, is it sunny and warm where you are, Daphne? You're on the West Coast, aren't you?
Yes, but we've actually been having, for us, cold weather. And I think it was just 2 days ago that we had a real nice hailstorm. And then some rain. And then yesterday, I think we got a little rain in the morning. And then now today, it's nippy, but the sun is a-shining. So we're very happy.
Okay, what's nippy for you?
Nippy for me is probably anywhere in the 50s.
Oh, okay.
Oh. So that's fair, right?
Yeah, that is fair.
The hundreds over here.
Still?
Is it really? Oh,
yes,
wow.
Literally. It's about 28 degrees Celsius inside at night.
So you
so
still
it's about 86.
Have you still got your fan going then, Robert?
Hold on.
Well, no, I didn't ask you to turn it on. No, I just asked
you.
Oh,
it?
No.
It's on.
Why did I have to mention it?
I've got the small fan today.
Lovely.
That's right, yeah. It's summer where you are. So
yes.
Very weird, isn't it?
Yeah, something we've had to get used to in this little time travel podcast is that, you know, when it's winter here, it's summer there. When it's day here, it's night there, you know, so.
Very
strange. We're used to being confused.
Those
very
two are also they're in the future as well.
Yeah, oh, don't go down that road. This could get too confusing.
No, don't do it. Stop.
It's already tomorrow there.
It is too.
Now, we've had our time checks around the world. Reese, what time is it in your part of Australia?
6 in the morning.
That's a bit more like, isn't it?
Lucky you.
Yeah.
Right then, Doctor Who then. Right then, so go on, Reese. I think you're the first one to ask Daphne a question, I think.
Am I?
Yes, you are. I've decided this.
Well, it's going to be a very, very easy one. How are you?
I am well, thank you. That's a hard question to answer, though. Just getting over a little bout with walking pneumonia. So, which
that's what I was worried about.
Yeah, no, I didn't realize, honestly. I guess I just assumed that I'd had it before somewhere along the line, but... it was a special feeling, and one that I was not familiar with, so it was a little spooky. But I got some great antibiotics, and within 5 days, I was out of pain, and I'm just a little weak. So I'm just taking it easy and preparing for the Gallifrey convention, because I know that will be... I will be very energetic.
And it will be exhausting.
Yeah.
And exhausting, yes.
Exhausting but fun.
Very much fun. Somebody said this, and I can't remember who it was, but somebody, I think it was on Twitter, said that the Gallifrey convention is like Christmas for Doctor Who.
Absolutely.
You know, everybody gets together again. It's like a big reunion, and everybody gets drunk.
And it's a Christmas I'll never get to see, apart from on little clips of video they put online.
Now, how do you know? You don't think you'll ever make it over for it?
Not unless I win the lottery, no. I don't think it's highly... Well, I suppose is a possibility you can win the lottery.
Give
one
a chance,
in a
Give
few
a
hundred million chance, I suppose.
But yeah.
There is a chance.
There is a chance. You could be one.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Because he's going to bring us all, aren't you, Adam?
No. Well, I don't know. Maybe if I won the lottery, I might consider it. But you've got to take this into consideration. You've got a hurdle to get over in regards to any funding that I might provide to this podcast. That's Deborah Pearson, who currently is upstairs reading Isabella a story.
I doubt I'll ever get out there as well, although I can get to the local conventions. I've been to conventions in Georgia and Alabama. So.
Oh, Alabama, that's where you said that you were sort of nearabouts, didn't you? I remember now, sorry, I forgot.
Yeah, that...
I was having a geography problem earlier on when I was discussing where everybody was to Daphne.
Well, let me ask you about Alabama. What's the fan base like there? Just out of curiosity.
Well, I don't live in Alabama. I live in Tennessee, but there is a very active group in Huntsville, Alabama. In fact, one of our regular correspondents to the podcast lives in Huntsville, and he provides some great feedback for us. And they have
Is that Matthew?
They started a convention. Was last year the first one? I think last year was the first one, and it was so incredibly successful. They didn't have any real Doctor Who guests. I mean, they had illustrators and stuff for the comics, but
right.
this year they're going to have Caitlin Blackwood as their guest of honor.
A big thrill for her, I would imagine.
And it's a very active group.
Okay, good, good. I was just out of curiosity because, you know, it was such a long time that, I mean, and I'm guilty of this as well. When I did Doctor Who, I hadn't heard of it. So, I didn't know anything as an American, but, turns out there's been a lot of like sort of almost like underground, fandom, for years and years and years in America. But now that, of course, it's been picked up and it's really skyrocketing. It's just exploding over here in America. But I am always curious to know what different parts of the United States, what it's looking like as far as, you know, what kind of, population there is, you know, it's just curious because it's fascinating to find pockets of people. I mean, I was doing this show called Hollywood Heights. It's just a little, soap thing. And, I was working with this really wonderful, property mistress, and, she, is just very young and adorable and hardworking, and, you know, we're just working. And then one day I'm somehow or another Doctor Who came up and she was like, "Oh my God, I'm such a huge fan." And, I was like, "You're kidding me." And she and her husband are like ginormous, fans, sci-fi all around, but Doctor Who in particular. And it blew me away. It blew me away. And so they're everywhere. I swear they're everywhere and they're where you least expect it. So, I'm thrilled because I don't feel so alone, you know, because I've always been sort of a sci-fi geek, but like I said, I was not familiar with Doctor Who in the beginning.
But you are now.
You've been to Chicago TARDIS, right?
I have. I've been once.
Once, right. Well, I was just to Chicago TARDIS this last year, and I was told that, what was it, 2 years ago you were at Chicago TARDIS? Or three.
I think maybe it's three years.
And I've heard that every year it grows exponentially. So the one that I went to, you know, seemed huge to me. And I've heard on a couple of other podcasts that the Chicago TARDIS, that Chicago, the city, is like the hub of Doctor Who worship, east of the Rockies, that not even New York has, you know, the conventions that Chicago has.
Wow.
Well, it basically was back in the 80s when I became a fan. Because I started watching on PBS, Fourth Doctor. And by the time the Five Doctors was shown, you know, we got it first before England.
Huh.
On PBS, I believe, 2 days early.
Thieves.
Travesty.
And that was because of the popularity. It was so incredibly popular.
You know, I've heard that there's some sort of a bit of animosity in some ways between the traditional long-term Doctor Who fans and the ones that have just jumped on board with a new series and that.
Yes.
Only minor animosity, but there is a little bit there.
Yeah, it's very interesting that the different factions
that
I'm sort of discovering as I go along. And it's funny because I do feel a little bit like I'm kind of still a tiny bit on the outside of all of that because I just sort of feel like a hybrid, you know? I'm not really just a fan, and I'm not really like a regular kind of participant in the shooting of Doctor Who because I'm sort of in this weird little movie moment and not in the series. So, and sort of like also in between everything. So, and it's also taken me a while to really understand the depth and truly understand why people, have the kind how they feel about Doctor Who is to me always been a really interesting question.
Yeah.
What is it that this what is the hold that that character has on people of all walks of life, all different ages, all different from all different walks of life in the world? You know what I mean? It's like, what is it? And I'm starting to pin it all down. And but in the end, for me, it's sort of like, I don't know. I sort of feel like I've sort of hover like sort of on the sidelines, and I can sort of view it from a different perspective. I don't know why I'm even talking about that, but it's kind of a groovy place to be, because I think I have a kind of interesting perspective on the whole thing, a distant kind of little bit.
My view on it is that I think it's because it is such a diverse subject. You can do anything with the character. You can take it anywhere. You can put it in any type of story situation. And I don't know any other genre or sort of idea that's able to do that other than Doctor Who.
And I think there's a weird, an interesting kind of, I mean, I'm going to sort of step on it here, but sort of a moralistic view that I have, I find interesting, because it's sort of like he's sort of, the Doctor is sort of for the underdog.
Yeah.
He's kind of a loner looking in.
Yeah.
And I think to a lot of people who feel that way in life, and there's also, you know, he's on the side of right.
Yeah.
He's intelligent.
He's always making observation comments about humans and human beings and our potential that I think make us realize we have value that we don't.
He's also a bit like a parent, isn't he? Because obviously he loves human beings, but when they do something wrong, he's like a disappointed parent in some ways.
Some way, maybe. I don't know.
Now, I've been waiting with bated breath because I knew this was coming on at some point. Robert, go on. Go on. You ever go asking Daphne a question? Can't wait for this.
Why? No, I was just going to ask, how has being in Doctor Who affected your life, or, you know, for better or for worse, or...
Oh, my gosh.
How has it changed?
It's been nothing but a blessing. I mean, I'm going to sound really cheesy and gross, and I don't care. I am cheesy and gross. So, no. it's a hard business in a lot of ways. And and so when a gift sort of kind of comes along that you didn't expect and really didn't know about, even, you know, wasn't in my consciousness at all. But to have a bunch of really groovy geeks get together and treat me with a lot of kindness and are interested in something I have to say, which I'll never understand, but I embrace it because it makes me feel part of something. And I really
part of history, aren't you?
Yeah. Absolutely. And
a 50-year-old show this year.
Yeah.
Right. Fans, all the way from the fans to the directors and producers and writers and actors. Everybody's really fascinating and interesting, and I've not found one person really that has been made me feel uncomfortable or bored. You know, it's just been so much fun, and so, you know, it's a gift. So I just have a blast. I absolutely love meeting everybody and getting to see how everybody is every time I get to see them. And I'm going to get to see Sylve in about a week, and so haven't seen The Hobbits, so it's been a while, and it's going to be great to hang out with him again. So, you know, I just love everything. Yeah. It's a gift, the whole thing.
Can I just mention also something else before you go? I just want to say, when your brother was in Twin Peaks, did you ever watch Twin Peaks?
Oh, my gosh, yes. Are you kidding me? I loved that show.
Did you ask him what was going to happen in the show?
Did he know what was going to happen in the show?
Yeah.
I did ask, and I think that they kept the actors in the dark as much. So it was like, that's my recollection, is that they wouldn't even be given the script or all of the script until the last minute so that it would be a secret. But I will say this, I just have to say this. Not only did I watch the show because I loved it, but I really thought my brother was stunning in that.
Oh, he was great.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes.
He was really special and in that. And I really was in awe of what Dana did in that and proud of him. And as a matter of fact, I think he's in town. I think I may be seeing him this morning as soon as we're done. He was just amazing in that part. And I just loved watching the whole show, but I was really proud of my brother. So there, I said it. Ha ha ha. Yeah.
So have
tell him we enjoyed it too.
So have you been able to see any of the sort of more recent Doctor Who's?
Oh my gosh, yeah. I watch all of Matt's stuff. I think he's fabulous, and I love Tennant, and I loved Eggleston, and I just think all the new guys have been fabulous and different. And I will say this. This has been something that's sort of been bugging me about that I haven't really experienced before. Is the interesting kind of, I feel like there's a huge loyalty by the fans in Doctor Who, but I also know that the fans are used to seeing companions come and go and used to seeing the doctors come and go. And I've seen like when Rory and Amy went away, I was devastated, okay? That really bothered me. It still bothers me. And I'm like, I'm missing them. And I really love the new companion. I think she's beautiful and fabulous and funny and clever and all those things. But I think I'm still really way too attached compared to other fans who are like, yeah, no, time for another companion. Let's move. And I'm like, jeez.
I think so. Sometimes it's a bit of both, isn't it? You're going to miss them, but you are looking forward to what's going to happen with the new companion. I mean, I must admit, I'm going to miss not seeing Karen Gillan's pretty face on the screen. And I absolutely love the character of Rory. I would have been quite happy if they'd got rid of Amy and kept Rory on. But they're gone, and now I'm quite excited to see what happens.
I would never guess.
I'll be quiet. I'm quite excited to see what happens with Jenna Louise Coleman. As is what always happens. I remember going back to this, you know, to 1970, blah, blah, when my favourite companion, Sarah Jane Smith, left and they brought in Leela. And that took me ages to get over the departure of Sarah. But it happened. And
like I've mentioned before on the podcast, the very first story I saw was that one. And I had no idea she was going to be leaving, and I loved her in that story and was kind of devastated. I'm going, what? Does this happen every story? I didn't have enough background on how things work. But I immediately liked Leela when she came in.
I can't say I immediately liked her, but I certainly I didn't mind her costume for a few weeks.
I was a new fan and just absorbing everything about the show. So.
Well, that did happen with Daphne, because Grace was a one-off.
Yeah.
And she was certainly changed the direction of Doctor Who, didn't you, Daphne, with kissing the Doctor?
I don't have that either. I had no idea. As a matter of fact, I didn't... I mean, I knew there was kind of a hoopla about it, or I don't know if that's... everybody was kind of freaking out afterwards, but I didn't know the depth of that until many, many years later when I was reading a book. I don't even remember which book it was, but there was a whole thing on the kiss and all of that, and I was like, oh my god, these guys, they could have killed me when I came over there, when I went over.
But you're also one of the only companions to kill the Doctor.
I was about to bring that up.
Yeah.
Killed him. I've loved him. It was a very and left him.
Yes. Refused to go away with him. Yes. So all in all, it's quite an important transition thing, the movie itself, because it just bridges that gap. I know there's obviously a big gap between it And Survival, and then an even bigger gap between it and the rebirth of Doctor Who. But it's still, if we didn't have the movie, it would seem a bit strange going from Survival to Rose.
I'm so curious, being on the fan side of things, how you experience this juggernaut of fan worship. I mean, when did it hit you that it was as enormous as it was? I mean, did it grow gradually, or was it a big aha the first time you went out, huge audience? It's like, wow. How did you experience that?
Well, the very first time was not that long after we had shot the show and invited to speak on a panel with Philip Siegel here at one of the early conventions for Gallifrey. I was terrified. I was never very good at giving interviews, was very unpracticed at it, sounded even more stupid than I really am, which is saying something. I just really feel legitimate in talking about the subject of Doctor Who. I didn't know enough. I could talk about my experience on the show, and I could talk about things with Philip regarding the shoot, but I couldn't really speak to Doctor Who in an intelligent way. So I was just, and so that was my first experience, and I really only did the panel and then was gone. So that was it. Didn't really understand anything. I remember there was quite a crowd, but wasn't really a part. I wasn't around it. So then.
So you didn't think it was for you.
But then I went to England in 2004, and I did. I brought my daughter, and my mother actually came too as well, and we all went out there. And so it was sort of a one-off, and I did some signings, and I started to see, well, God, there's little pockets of really cool little places where really sweet people come, and then I did a kind of interview with Gary Russell, who is actually responsible for me to speak semi-intelligently about anything in front of people. He actually interviewed me several times in a row, and I started to kind of understand how to do it. And he's people on the planet, so it just made it easier. But anyway, so I did an interview there, and I sort of started to see, and you know, some people showed up for that. And then finally, I think it was 2 years after that, I went to an actual convention in England, and then boom, I really saw how it was kind of what it's like. And again, I have to say, I believe it or not, because I talk about myself, and I'm a big talker, and I'm loud and blah, 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 but I'm also really kind of shy. And it's sort of, I think I compensate for that by being loud and talking too much, weirdly. My favorite thing is to meet people. And my favorite thing is to find out about their lives and what they've been doing and where they come from and what they like about Doctor Who. I like to interview people. So I actually do that. 10 hours go by, and I didn't know what happened to the time. I have the best time. I love doing this. And so for me, it's sort of like a match. I just didn't find my way to that right away. I felt sort of like under a microscope, and I felt illegitimate, you know. But now I'm I really dig meeting people, and I love it. So, and I love them. So I just feel very lucky to be able to be in a position to do that. And that's the truth.
Excellent.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you
well,
for that.
Well, it sounds to me like you need to start your own podcast app.
Well, I was just wondering if there was any ever concern that the TV movie might not work while you were filming it. Not from you, but anyone else on set. Were they kind of worrying, oh, we know the fans are so loyal, but will they accept this?
I'm sure that was probably going through all kinds of people's brains. I was so removed from, I had no understanding. I just was, I had a great script with a great part in it for me. And I was working with a fantastic actor in Paul McGann, and working with great producers and a great director. And I was just having the time of my life. So secretly in the back of my mind going, gosh, it would be so incredible if this thing got picked up and I was going to be able to relocate, you know, to one of my favorite places, to Vancouver. Oh my God, it's beautiful. And to be doing these incredible stories with this great actor. I mean, I'm telling you, we just had Paul and I laughed our butts off all the time. And it was saying something too, because shooting at night and you kind of get fried when you're shooting, when you're not used to working nights, your whole clock gets whacked out and you're kind of dingy and tired, and he was probably jet lagged too, and you know, so it's like, it could have been a kind of, and it was freezing, it was a very cold winter, and we were out there in it, so, but you know, it could have been a kind of a drudgery, but it really, really wasn't. We just laughed our asses off. I made him laugh. We gave each other our time. and we just had a blast. You know, I'm sure that Philip must have been kind of, you know, getting gray hairs over this. And I'm sure that, you know, Universal, Fox, BBC, even Paul on some level, I'm sure was privy to what was going on. And everybody was probably trying to make sure that they were positioning the show to make it have the best impact. And I know that it was important that it have an impact on in America. And that was the big testing point, I guess. And so, you know, when they aired it, it was aired opposite a very popular show in America at the time called Roseanne. And it was a big episode. I think it might have been episode of Roseanne, the show there, when her husband has a heart attack. And also there was some sort of basketball. Yeah. And so we really kind of put it into the worst place that we could have as far as trying to really get the audience. But, I don't know. So I'm sure there were a lot of people wringing their hands about it. But for me, I was just, you know, yeah, I was hoping that it would get picked up for all kinds of reasons, but with the stressing out about it, you know, I was just having a great time shooting. So that's the best answer I got for that one.
That's a pretty good answer. Awesome.
The only thing that's the best way to be.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the only thing that I didn't like about the movie itself was a couple of plot points, not the performances by any of the actors in it. I did like, I think, all the characters, really. Even that version of the Master, it was a bit sort of pantomime villainy in some ways, but it was still interesting, you know. It was certainly the most scariest and evil version, I think, of the Master.
Pieces of past convention footage that I've been able to see make it look like you and Paul McGann still have a great time together.
Yeah, it's really strange. I haven't had this experience with many people that I've been, first of all, that I've worked with, let alone that I've met, you know. But it was weird. When I saw him in, I guess it was 2004, when I went over there, I did a big finish thing with him, and I hadn't seen him since we shot the show. And I was a little nervous, you know. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to see Paul again, oh my God. And you know what? It was like no time had passed. We immediately started to give each other a hard time again and laugh our asses off. So it's just weird. I don't know what it is. I don't know. I don't know what that is. But, you just get along. He's just the sweetest guy. You know, he's super generous actor and a really kind person. And I guess that works for me. You know,
well, I saw him quite recently at Ripper Street on a good, very good drama on BBC One, which, I would recommend. I haven't actually watched it properly, but I've seen bits of it, and Deb watches it, my wife. It's very realistic as far as it's set in, you know, in the time of Jack the Ripper, and the scenery, the costumes. It really does have the essence of that period. It's brilliant. So if BBC America start showing Ripper Street, I'd recommend you to watch it.
They already do.
I'll shut up then. It's not really a question, Daphne. It's a fact that you spoke of your good friendship with Paul McGann. But when you watch the film, there's clearly a chemistry there that works really well, and you can see that. And also that you spoke of hopes that it was going to carry on, and it's such a shame it didn't. I mean, was there any feedback immediately afterwards? Was there any hint that there might be more episodes?
I wasn't privy to anything. I wasn't really, I don't know. I guess, I'm sure Paul was, they were communicating with Paul regarding this because it was so much about him. But I didn't really hear much other than, and I don't even remember how I heard, but, they had a big screening at the DGA, the Directors Guild Theater. I really didn't even understand what I look back at that and I laugh at myself because I didn't really understand what even that was. There was all kinds of press out front and, nobody prepped me. I didn't know any of this. I just was thinking we were going and having a screening. I didn't understand that there was going to be press. I didn't understand there was going to be live, interviews, all kinds of things. I was completely kind of geek at an interview with Paul where all I could say was, I'm not kidding you. I'm not exaggerating. I could say nothing but the word brilliant. And then they'd say something else. And I know the writing was brilliant. I mean, nobody, my manager, my agents, nobody said, this is what you're walking into. This is pre-Gary Russell teaching me how to do interviews. A deer caught in the headlights. And I couldn't even watch the show. We went in for the screening and we got to the dress part when I was in the dress and I was like, I gotta get out of here. I cannot watch my boobs on screen. I'm leaving.
Don't worry, I can't watch mine on screen either, so you...
Baby, do it there, Adam.
So I went outside and I drank and waited for everyone else to come out afterwards and just prayed no one would, say anything about thought of the show until I was gone. But that was fun. It was such a fun moment. So that was my experience, man. That's after the show was over and we had this big, screening and everything. I was sort of the fish out of water. I just, so whatever. But it's actually for me, it's really, as far as all that goes, I just like to work. I like to act. I like to work. I like to create moment and create the illusion of reality and that's what this job affords me, so that's where my joy lies. But all the other stuff, all the big press and everything with the cameras and all that, that's it's a necessary evil, but I wasn't prepared back then.
have you ever been in a sort of place and had a sort of very unexpected somebody come up to you and say, oh, you were in Doctor Who.
I actually, and this is weird because it was on the same damn show that I mentioned already. I was doing that little soap thing, Hollywood Heights, and there was a guy who was playing a bouncer in one of the scenes and came up to me during the shooting of it and said, been looking forward to meeting you because I want you to know I'm a big fan of Doctor Who. And again, I was like, okay, great. I can't believe it. Great, thank you. And so every so often there'll be something like that. And it's kind of a shock. It's happened. It's interesting.
So when are you next coming over to the UK then?
I don't say at the moment, but it looks like it's going to happen. But I'm not sure I can actually speak to it yet. So I will say I am very hopeful that in not the too distant future, I will be making a trip over there. So I will announce it. I will be on, Facebook and Twitter and all that good stuff when the time comes. So let everybody.
Look forward to that.
I'm really excited. I've been dying to get over there. So it'll be fun.
Well, yeah, you have you've recorded some Big Finish. Last one that I see was like in 2011. Is there any other Big Finish planned that would bring you over?
Another thing that I can't really speak to. let me just say, very likely. And that will, I will, let everybody know when I can about that too. That's all I can say about that.
What is it like to work with Big Finish?
You know what? They're just, it's really actually very cool because it feels almost to me, and this is just my little perspective here, but, feels a little bit like doing a play. Yeah. You sit down and you do the whole, you know, you do the whole thing at once. And you kind of dive in and go for it. And it's really, you know, you focus on the acting mostly instead of all the visual, you know, evils.
And, well, is everybody there or is like the whole cast there when you do it?
No, although I must say the first time I did a Big Finish, there were many, many, many people there, including Paul and stuff. So there were, it was like probably five or six of us all. And in that experience it was kind of groovy. We were all in our own little pods with glass walls.
Yes.
See each other and we put our earphones on and we would, dive in and play off of each other as best we could, in that venue or whatever the word is. And then the next time I did it, it was with, actually it was here. Gary Russell came over here and I did a Dark Shadows and there were several actors there. That similar, and then the next time was with Yiji, and it was me and Yiji, and Katie Manning showed up, which was, you know, a true gift because I'd never met her and immediately fell madly in love with her, and so it was really the three of us, and there was no one else there. We had some they had previously recorded other voices, so I was able to work with that. But as far as having they weren't. And then, so, you know, you can do it in all kinds of different, fashions. So it's really about using your imagination and acting and actually mm-hmm. just being fearless. So, and it's tiny, it's small, it feels sort of weirdly safe. And, although I was did it. I was absolutely out of my mind. I didn't know the script was ginormous and I had never done it before. So I was pretty, and there were all these incredible actors that, you know, I'd never met. So outside of yeah. all. So, it was a little daunting, but, again, I got to mention Gary. Gary was directing that one. So that really helped me because I knew him and he knew how to talk to me and he's just great. You know, he really works with actors well. And, so that helped a lot. But, yeah, so it's actually a really, really fun thing to do. And again, it's one of those little, I had no idea. It's a little gift, you know, it's like, so ever so often it'll come up and I'm like, oh goody, I get to do another one, you know? So, you know, and I'm thrilled when I hear people like them, you know,
Great. Has anyone approached you about, doing anything for the 50th anniversary?
Yeah, every week. Oh, sorry. You're talking about Daphne. Sorry.
yeah. Or can you say anything?
I can say a couple things. I've been approached. I can say that. And, I will be popping over to Florida, at the beginning of November and I'm going to pop in. November's a busy month. So I'm going to be saying hello to people at Hurricane Who and I will be going to the, I can't say that yet. Can't say it.
Well, the bit you just said, the bit you were going to say.
There's another one that I'm doing, but I can't say where.
Oh, okay. We didn't say it, so that's all right.
Okay.
Even though Kobe's going, as if you can read your mind.
I can actually say this. I will be at the end of the month, so I can tell you the beginning and the end of the month, I will be going to Chicago TARDIS, and, which I just finally figured out recently. So that's happening.
That'd be good if you could persuade Mary to go to that one.
Wait, you're going to Chicago TARDIS this year in November?
Yes.
Hey!
Most excellent! Yeah. I will be meeting you. I understand I understand Colin Baker is going to be there too.
You know what? I adore him. He actually, every time, it's another weird thing because it was like sort of almost like a little bit like when I was with Paul. I met and I was like, you know, oh my God, okay, hi. And he is so funny and so sweet and kind to me. And we were thrown together a couple times in England, and where I was trying to, I don't know, Charlie Ross, that crazy guy who I adore, was trying to throw some kind of game show together. And it was, there was music involved, singing, and I didn't know what, and he was very Scottish, with a very thick Scottish accent, which I'm sorry, I can't understand a word. I understand a word he was saying. And so I was not understanding the host and didn't know, I didn't understand what he needed once I understood the words he was saying, sitting next to me and took over and was brilliant and sang and was absolutely delish. So I am thrilled that he will be there because we have a great, I don't know why, he's very nice to me and, he makes me laugh. So we just have a great time. So this will be fun.
Well, I've met Colin Baker. I met him in 1990, I believe, on the Isle of Wight, which is obviously where I live. Listeners? Oh, right. Uh-huh. Oh, sorry, I got a bit carried away there. Yeah, no, he's very generous person. I was lucky enough to have my picture taken on Bessie with Alistair Pearson, but unfortunately Alistair got to wear the coat and I didn't, but I still had my picture taken with him on the cast, and that was a very privileged thing for me because nobody else other than me and Alistair were able to have that happen. So and he was a very, very generous man, and obviously we hear stories of how generous he is with the fans, and he's sometimes prepared to do amateur, you know, drama stuff recording on either film or audio, so I'd love to get him on the show one day, I must admit.
I thought it would lead to that.
Yeah, he's going to be the guest of honor at the convention here, which is in the South, in Atlanta, over, I believe, Memorial Day weekend. And unfortunately, I can't make it because that's the weekend that my middle daughter is graduating from high school.
Forget that. That's not important.
Yes, that's important.
So, Daphne, I have to ask you. You said you've seen some of the more recent Doctor Who's. Do you have a favourite episode?
Okay. I have to say that, wow, okay. The angels, the weeping angel thing freaks me out. I mean, it just, yeah, I mean, it's like, and there's several things that Stephen Moffat has written that I get. It's almost like it's like he thinks I'm gonna just do this, but oftentimes we'll watch his episodes and that's one of them, those Weeping Angel episodes, as where, you know, it's like he's got access to some 3 or 4 or 5 year old who has an active imagination.
So he's a kid, I think.
Yes,
it's like 3, 4, 5 year old, I'm just guessing. But he has access to that child's imagination, and that child is saying, I had a nightmare. What was it about, honey? Oh, it just, in the garden, you know, and it after me, and it was trying to get me. He has this, like, perfect perception into what will freak a young child out in the world. Oh, there's something in your closet, okay? It's alive, and it's going to eat you, and it's in your closet. Like, okay.
Yeah, okay. I think what you're trying to say is he's got a bit of a warped mind.
And that, I have to say, I wasn't always like this. I used to be kind of like one of those people that I didn't like, you know, slasher movies. And I still don't really like slasher movies. But I like, you know, apocalyptic movies and things that are very, the world is ending, and very disturbing, contagious. You know,
yes,
and it's, oh my god, and so I've turned into that kind of viewer, and so yeah, I think I like the adrenaline and having the crap scared out of me, and so I really enjoy those really horrific things that Moffat does on the show. So I'm enjoying the new series a whole lot, and of course Weeping Angel started back in Tennant's
Blink.
Season. Blink. Mm. My God, was that brilliant?
Yes, it was.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Don't Blink.
It's funny to say that about strange. It's like I had a dream last night. This will digress us slightly, but I thought it's worth mentioning.
Okay. Adam, we've done with to hear your fantasies.
Well, you're going to hear it anyway because it's my show. I had a dream last night. Have you heard of lucid dreams? When you're in a dream and you realise suddenly you're actually in a dream and you hang on, I can do some silly things here that you wouldn't normally do in real life. And for some reason in this dream, I decided, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go around and stab everyone.
Oh,
what?
I have to say, that's not the thing I would normally do in a... Uh-huh. I really don't know why it occurred to me that the only thing I could do in this dream, I think it might be because I was actually sort of caged in somewhere. I couldn't actually get out of this wherever building I was, as I just decided to go and stab everyone. But I stabbed everyone with like a letter opening knife. So basically all I did just poke them with it. Didn't actually stab them. I was stabbing these people and not really injuring them, which is a bit strange. And I was getting really frustrated because I had control over the dream, yet I couldn't change this this letter opening knife into anything more than just a letter opening knife. But I do like it. It's only about the third lucid dream I've had in my life. And I'm quite disappointed with the outcome, apart from the fact I was able to keep it going a bit longer than the two previous times. Normally it happens and I realise, I'm in a dream. Oh, I'm going to wake up now. And you do. But there you go. Sorry. Got slightly sidetracked there.
That is really amazing. We're going to have to talk about this now.
Are we?
Oh, dear.
Because I'm sitting here going, well, let me see. What does it mean? Have you been feeling...
frustrated?
You took control over something that you need to you want to accomplish, and so you feel like stymied by outside forces, and so you feel like I don't know. This is very psychologically very fascinating.
I must admit, the only thing I do like having dreams, and I don't like it when you're in a nice dream and you have to get up in the middle of the night and go to the toilet and you get back to bed and you can't get back into that dream again. It's that sort of thing. That's the only thing that frustrates me, because I do like a nice dream, because it's a complete it's like watching Doctor Who. It's a complete departure from your normal life generally. And sometimes, and this is the thing I like most about them, you get to chat with dead relatives as if they're not really dead. And
it's a seance, not a dream.
No, it's a dream. I do like dreams when I meet my dead granddad. That's doesn't happen very often, as I say.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Hmm. I dreams where because I write. Yeah. I've written actually several scripts, but only really completed a couple. But I love to write, and there have been a couple times when I have woken up with an entire script in my head, and I've learned to actually capture that information immediately. And it's very rare, but it's happened a couple times where I've woken up and went, okay, I have the script. Now I just have to get it on the page. So immediately start hammering away and getting it down, make some notes to make sure I don't forget certain things, but mainly the end. But those are my favorite because it just feels like a little, talk about a gift. Yeah. Some it said, here you go, want to write, here's your story. Incompletion, that is like, wow. So that's my favorite kind. And sex dreams, and I have to say, fortunately, I've only had a couple of those.
Yeah, Reese has those.
I had a couple.
Oh, you know it, don't you?
can I jump on this writing segue here?
Oh, sorry.
Because I understand you have a book that has just come out recently called Dead Woman Walking. It's a very intriguing title.
It's actually called Dead Woman Laughing. And it was actually...
You're the movie man.
It's by shooting Doctor Who. I was dead on the cloister room floor, and it kind of puts a crimp in making it believable that you are dead. So I was trying to shut up, and I just couldn't stop laughing. And was there obviously, and said, "I said dead laughing," and he said, "That's the title of your book." And so, 15 years go by, and someone asked me if I'd be interested in writing something, and I And the first thing I thought of was that. And then I thought, well, that's actually an interesting thing, because I have often said, wouldn't it be funny to sit down and put all the footage together of all the different times that I have been killed or murdered or died, and then just to flip it over, all the different times I've killed or murdered someone else, and I thought, okay, there's a theme. And Dead Woman Laughing kind of goes along with that theme, and in the end, I think that being an actor, if you're in there long enough, you really have a book's worth of humiliating, as I like to call them, swallowing sieges. You can be just sitting around minding your own business, and suddenly you have a thought of something that you went through, and your face turns red, and you're just going, oh my God, if I did that, I can't believe you made me do that, or I can't believe I tried to do that and failed, or I can't believe, you know, all these different things. It's just, it's really, it takes kind of insane actor and put your ass out there and know that you really have to have a thick skin to be in this business and to do this. And so Dead Woman Laughing is about that and kind of letting people like just sort of have a peek in what it's like to be in this crazy business. And there's a lot of wonderful things about it, and there's also a lot of pitfalls, and in the end, kind of just have to, as my dad used to say, who is a director and an actor too, he used to say, you have to have the, and he was probably quoting someone else, to be honest, but you have to have the hide of a rhinoceros and the heart of a baby to be an actor. So that's what I, and I wanted to make people laugh. So hopefully people do, and from what I hear, people are laughing, so.
Yeah, I've only read good things about it.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, I'm very intrigued, yes.
Yeah. Mm. I'd love to read it myself, yeah.
You have to write some big Finnish scripts.
I sort of need a translator as a matter of fact, my partner here, Vito, I kind of have to have him translate some stuff for me whenever I get a big Finnish script, because I'm like, what is this? What is this from? There's so much that history of Doctor Who that I exposed to. So I do. I have my little translator here, and I should. Actually, I'd love to do one with my character. I would really like to. I've been.
Yes.
What they thought, what I think about, or what I have thought about as far as if my character was able to kind of go on adventures with the Doctor, go, blah, blah, blah. And I realized that I never thought of that. What I did think about was what it would be like for the Doctor to come back after a period of time to find Grace, and what has become of her. Because if you think about it, the end of the show, she has had her whole intellectual paradigm shifted because of what she has found to be the truth. The Doctor, his two hearts, if you will. And and that she's lost her job, she's lost her boyfriend, and what that happened to her. So it would be so fascinating to see what has become of her and what she's turned into, and to sort of see how that would. I don't think they're very interested.
No. You just dropped out a little bit there. I think it's just gone. Somebody must have moved something. The trouble with Skype is when somebody says something, it overrides. If there's another sound from someone else, it slightly overrides what the original person is speaking, and sometimes just the slightest noise takes it out, and I just might have lost a little bit of what he's saying, but I did get the gist of it, and it does sound like it would be a really good idea, and I should think you should get on and do it, and because you're very good friends with Gary Russell, I'm sure he'll be interested in actually pursuing that particular avenue.
Certainly I don't think Gary
would be interested.
Well, you know what, I know all the people for a big Finnish, so who knows? You never know. We'll see.
Yes.
I would love
cool.
Absolutely. Well, I hope that does happen. That'd be fantastic.
Mm. Yes, I would like to know more about Grace and the Doctor together.
Yeah. Mm. I think quite a few people would as well, wouldn't they? Because it was a shame that Grace really decided not to travel. I don't know whether if there was going to be any more episodes, whether he would have gone back and got her. Hopefully he would have done.
Well, he's done
that before. Like to think that he would have done. He certainly did with Donna.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just something. It was interesting to me to actually realize that I'd never thought of incredible adventures that my character could have experienced with the Doctor. That to me is interesting that I never thought of that, but did think, wow, okay, so he comes back 10 years later, and what has happened?
I mean, without the wig, of course.
Yeah.
Who is she now?
Where? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How far has she gone? I mean, does she completely not believe in anything anymore, or does she believe in everything?
Right.
Oh, she's got a history with, what was it, abandonment or something? I'm trying to remember my own character now.
But being Doctor Who, Daphne, the Doctor could go back at any time during Grace's life and visit her.
Yeah, you know, that would be fascinating. It would be so interesting. Yeah, definitely. Think about writing that.
Yeah. Right, then, who hasn't asked a question? Kirby, you were thinking of one, weren't you?
He's asked one.
I asked mine.
Oh, was that it? Was it? Well, we're only allowed to ask one question.
No, I asked, I think, three.
Did you?
She also answered one that I, indirectly, that I was going to ask.
Oh, right, fair enough. Then.
That's several.
I keep talking, and then finally it's like, shoot, she's answered the questions that I had, so, because I just ramble on.
Well, that does make you rather the ideal guest on a show, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. It depends. May be coming to Missouri in April, which I didn't know. Oh. Kansas City's in Missouri?
Tennessee. Yeah, Kansas City is in Missouri.
Jesus, I really have a problem with
geography. So do I, so don't worry about it.
So do
Kansas
I.
Kansas City is also in Kansas.
Yes, that's what I was going with. Thank you.
Oh, you're going to appear in The Wizard of Oz. Hey!
Why, it's a man!
Oh, you can see Reese's picture. Excellent.
No comment.
Well, I have another question if everybody else has run out of theirs.
Oh, I haven't run out. I just don't want to steal anybody's... I can't speak all of a sudden. Mind you, I haven't been doing much speaking, so that's probably why. Yeah, go on, Mary.
I understand that your daughter is in the acting profession as well and that you've even worked with her.
Oh, yeah.
What is that like?
She is... Well... I'm going to sound like a mom, but I promise you...
You are one.
Go on. Sound like a mom.
I'm only being a mom by saying how fabulous she is, but I will say this. You can check out her website and you'll see how fabulous she is. It's not just me. She's actually attending Juilliard right now. Cool. She likes her a lot.
That's pretty wonderful.
And she is just... pretty extraordinary. She decided she wanted to go into the business, and I honestly, my first thought secretly was, oh God. And then because it's tough. You do have to have the height of a rhinoceros. It's not for sissies. So, but at the same time, I also know that, first of all, you can't tell somebody not to follow a dream. That's just ridiculous. And, as a matter of fact, if you don't want somebody to follow their dream and you tell them so, especially your own child, they're probably going to do even more so. So that's not what you want to do. And also, what the hell? We're here for 5 seconds. I want my child to be happy. And she really is meant for this because she can do it. She's an incredible actress. I've seen her, and not only that, she's seen sort of the underbelly, all different sides to the business because she's been raised by a mother who is in the business. And she I told her when she was very young and she decided to do this. I was like, well, just treat it like you're an athlete because being a woman in this industry is different than it is for a man. That's a fact. And I said, treat it like you've got so much time and prepare for, a time when you know, they might not be calling you as much. So make your own business. And I will say this to any actor, male or female, especially anybody who's starting out. I will say, you know, create your own work. Do not wait for someone to call you about anything. Create your own work. So when Peyton was little, I would say to her, she was very creative. She could, she can write music. She sings. She can do all these things. And I said, you know, these are all valuable things for you to be able to do and create when you're not actually in front of an audience on stage or in front of a camera on a set. Because you need to have a creative outlet all the time and keep yourself, sane. Because that's the drawback about being an artist, and all artists would know this on any level, amateur or professional, is that if you don't do it, you go crazy. So you need to have an outlet. And so I told her to, I suggested to her that she keep all of these different, creative outlets, active, and she has, and then some, and then as far as creating her own work, she before she went to Juilliard, she was doing play after play after play over here, and then I also attended AMDA, the American Musical and Dramatic Academy in New York, and so she'd experienced it there and done a lot of film over there while she was attending there, and then came home and was doing all kinds of theater work and musicals, and she was just doing extraordinary things, and then created her own little web series, and I directed her, and that's when I worked with her, and also worked with her because she's all over my music, the album that we did. She sings backup on that, and is absolutely made, as far as I'm concerned. Just really it's incredible.
Grace Notes.
Yeah, Grace Notes, right. And yes, yeah. Really makes the album. She's just got an extraordinary instrument, and we sound really well, good together.
Well, is she majoring in drama at Juilliard or music?
No, she's doing drama. However, uh-huh. Have voice classes, and so she does sing well there. Although right now, primarily the first 2 years, I guess they focus on scene study and you know, theater. But they do have voice classes, and that I saw a third year group while I was over there doing a musical, and so they were singing, acting, dancing, all, everything. They're incredible. I got to actually have a little peek inside of what they go through, because they had an open house that they allow the parents to come and attend, and in December I got to go over there and do that. And let me tell you something. That was one of the highlights of my life. I got to sit there, watch these kids doing their thing. And it just, even thinking about it now, brings tears to my eyes. Oh. It's just a beautiful thing.
I mean, she's with the creme de la creme of the art students going to Juilliard.
The teachers are all just incredible. Really loved about this particular school, and she actually did research all of this before she applied. She just found that they are very, they focus not only on the artist, but they focus on giving back. For instance, this summer she'll be going to New Orleans to teach, to like basically hold a class for underprivileged kids. You know, they also go to Africa and do this. They reach out into communities that would not otherwise have the opportunity to be exposed to this kind of creativity, and do like, you know, a series of classes and teach and let them to the children experience this, and where they may never have had that experience outside of this particular outreach program. So, you know, this is the way Juilliard works. And I can see how all of the teachers are with these kids. And it's a very nurturing and also inclusive kind of approach to acting. Whereas you might go to certain schools, they drum it into you that this is wrong and this is right, and you will do it our way because that's the right way. Whereas Juilliard is more like, what works for you, and let's figure that out, and let's find a way to expand on that. And so it really is about the individual artist, but also just really inclusive into different techniques and approaches. And my approach has been basically to acting is basically a childlike use your imagination kind of thing. And I don't like to have to get too much in my head about it. I like to use my heart more. And a lot of teachers don't do that. They want you to break something down in your brain. And I,
they're very technique oriented. Yeah.
It's not a bad thing to have technique. I mean, that's really useful to have your bag of tricks when you're in trouble. For whatever reason, you're not quite prepared enough or whatever. For some reason you lose the magic part, which is to be is submerged so deeply into what you're doing that you don't think with two brains, like a director, editor, writer, or like an actor. You're thinking more. You're only thinking as a human being and experiencing this in this moment right now for the first time. I mean, that is the purest place to be, you know, and it's an honest place, and you can't really go too wrong if you're there, in my opinion. And so it's just the playing, it's making believe, and it's creating the illusion and putting the adult considerations, like hitting your mark or being loud enough on stage to be heard in the back row. You know, there are certain things that you have to do that are going to split the brain, but it's like a magic trick. You have that so that you're a responsible actor, and then you have the rest that makes you a brilliant actor, which is to make believe. And so I just saw a lot of that safe environment to make that happen and to really make these kids extraordinary. And you look at people like Robin Williams, Kevin Spacey, wonderful actress, Jessica Chastain, who is just huge. I think that's her name. She's just huge. She's an alum of Juilliard. You guys see the movie The Help?
Yeah, I didn't see The Help, so I don't know.
No,
I've heard of it though.
She's in that. She's been in everything lately. She's just coming out in all kinds of big movies. Check her out. But she's a Juilliard alum, so she that's kind of you know, the kind of students kind of. Artists that they turn out. So I'm really proud of Peyton, and as you can tell,
yes,
nothing wrong with that,
and for good reason. For good reason.
Mm. Yeah.
How old is she, Daphne?
She's 24. She's just an incredible person. She's a very generous soul, and she's compassionate, and she's super smart, and
so it's a bit like a mum then.
Okay, I'll go with that. She's also more talented than I would ever be. But I'll say this: keep your eye out for this kid. She's gonna go places, and you're gonna fall in love. So anyway, I love my kid. What can I say?
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing her in action. And also, maybe we can bring her over to get some big finish work.
You know what? I would kill to do that. And there's a chance that when I come over next, she'll be coming too. So
excellent.
Maybe wrestle up. That would be so much fun, wouldn't it? Oh, my God. Woo!
Yeah.
I was a little bit worried when you said I would kill to do that, seeing as we talk about dreams with stabbing people in them.
I will hasten to say that I failed to stab anybody because it was a knife that for opening up letters.
That sucks.
I thought you're defending yourself in a dream.
I'll be quiet. Right, anybody else?
I've answered every question. Listen, you guys are adorable. I want to do this again sometime.
Oh, yes, please.
So do we.
Even I'm awake.
I wasn't very responsive the first time. I guess you guys tried to contact me, and I don't know why that was.
It's because I got my time zones all mixed up.
Yes, it was Adam's fault.
It's my fault.
We'll go with that. But I love you guys, and I want to do this really do. This has been so much fun. I love it.
Oh, love it.
Now, Daphne, I have to say, this is the first show I've ever done that I've been virtually speechless in, because I've just been sat there really enjoying listening to you, and I hope our listeners enjoy it as much as I have, and thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, I love you.
All enjoyed you being quiet, Adam. Oh, sorry.
Daphne, you could have spun tales of glamour and, you know, had us all in awe, but you didn't. You were such an honest and humble human being, and I loved listening to you and laughing with you.
Mm. Yeah, this was great. Thanks for coming on.
I, you know what? I hope I get over there to see you.
By the way, I heard yours and Vito's song. You did the Beatles. What was it? What, that song?
Oh.
One of the Beatles songs.
All I need is love.
Ba-ba-ba. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. And producer of albums and all things music. He is brilliant. One of the tunes on Grace Notes he wrote, and it's wonderful. And he produced that album, and it wouldn't be what it is without him, and that's a fact. Thanks, honey, by the way.
Oh. Well, I'll say, I can't say thank you, Daphne, without saying thank you to Vito, because obviously he's been heavily involved in arranging this. So thank you, Vito.
Yes, thanks for sharing Daphne with us, Vito.
Yes.
Yes.
Take her back, though.
Next time we talk to Vito.
Yeah.
He's a great interviewer. He's much smarter than I am. You guys should interview him one day.
I'm not smart.
You are.
No, I aren't.
Yes, you are, and you have a bigger voice than everything.
Don't fight on our heart. Our behalf. To get enough of that on this show.
Yeah.
I love you guys, and everybody who's like up in the wee hours of the morning, please have a night's sleep for me. I'm sorry I stole your sleep.
No.
It was worth it.
Yes.
Yes, for sure.
Thank you,
Daphne. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Yes, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. See ya.
Bye. Thank you, Vito. Bye. Well, that was fun, wasn't it?
Yes. I was trying so hard to be quiet because any time, you know, even I laughed, it would totally block her out.
No, it's awful. You can't. It's difficult. And the only way, I suppose, around it would have been to just to mute. But the trouble is then
I kept doing
everybody
that.
Wanted
to speak.
Well, I think if we'd known it was going to happen, because we don't normally have that problem, do we? We could have perhaps muted, you know, and then just come in. So, trouble is, you don't know who's going to come in and speak, do you? That's something. I think she could have just carried on speaking without us intervening quite comfortably.
Sure.
I'm still having the Skype problem, so there were times I couldn't understand a lot of her.
Yeah, that's the same. I think everybody was having that. I mean, I did hear, sounded like somebody was filling a bowl of something like that, and that sort of drowned something out. I don't know where that came from. It's really weird. It's spooky.
I didn't have a bowl.
Robert.
Yeah, weeding again, Robert.
Is it your fan?
Robert's got loads of fans. Anyway, right, so we've got a limited period of time to go now, which is probably just as well, considering we're going to be talking about the wedding of Sarah Jane Smith.
Or, as somebody on Facebook wrote, the welding of Sarah Jane Smith, or the
weeding.
Yes. Right then, let's go on. I'll see if I can synopsize this. I watched it once. Basically, Sarah Jane is in love.
You didn't just watch it?
I did watch it. I watched it with Isabella, I think.
Oh, okay.
She was underwhelmed, hence she didn't come on the show and talk about it. Anyway, so, Sarah Jane's in love, but she's acting a bit strangely, isn't she? Because I think as soon as he puts the ring on her finger, she starts turning off computers and things.
That's not for a while, though, is it, that he puts the ring on?
Let me speak, for goodness sake. All right, I'm just sort of simplifying, because episode one's a bit, you know, well, there's a lot going on, but you're just watching it, waiting for the doctor to turn up, because
you hear
the TARDIS.
Yeah, the TARDIS.
That is so true.
You hear the TARDIS, and you don't. But, yeah, so basically she's in love, and she's got a mysterious, smarmy, and he's very smarmy, lover. Luke and that's trying to think about, you know, shall he call him Dad, and Clyde and Rani Well, Clyde specifically is a little bit suspicious.
Clyde, very definitely Clyde. I have a feeling that when we hear
Kirby
later, he's going to say Clive.
Who said Clive? Clive?
Ian's thing has Clive, yeah.
Oh, does it? Okay, well, we might listen to that later.
That's my job.
Let's not pick on him too much. We like his feedback.
Yes, we do. I'm sure he's quite capable of picking back. But anyway, so...
Picking what?
Picking back on Kirby for being pedantic. That's what I meant, thank you. It's a big build up to a dinner in which he gives her the ring, which then slightly hypnotizes her. And
has always been good at playing possessed.
Yes. Oh yeah, yeah. But she wasn't. Like, it was. She, but it
must live.
It was very subtle. This wasn't it. Very subtle. She was herself, but she wasn't. You know, only on certain instances she wasn't. Like when she turned off Mr. Smith and. You know, things like that. She was very, very clever the way she played it on this particular part. But
what she said when she closed him off, she said, "Mr. Smith, I don't need you," or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so basically, it's a big build up to this wedding event.
Did anyone think it was a little odd that the two boys saw her shut down Mr. Smith and were a little bit appalled, but Ronnie just got so into that she was going to be the flower girl.
Yes.
No, that doesn't surprise me at all of a teenage girl. I think that was very accurate to
I mean, I remember
when Alicia had the opportunity of being a bridesmaid, all focus was on the bridesmaidness. That's all she wanted to do. So, yeah. Yes, so basically, so they arrived. Now, one of the registrar at the wedding, she was a... very famous face in the world of sci-fi. Can we remember? Well, obviously, she was in Space 1999.
Yes, Ginny Merton.
Yes, but she was in Marco Polo.
Yeah, did she play the
Space 1999?
But in Marco Polo, did she play the little Chinese
Ping Chou?
Yeah,
yes.
Thought she did. She was quite pretty in those.
And she was also in Space 1999. Jerry Anderson series.
Yes, I knew that one. She had a short haircut then. Well, she had a short haircut now, didn't she?
Well, she just had a short haircut still, yeah.
She's aged quite well.
Before we came on to record, I was showing one of my daughters, I think it was the geek daughter, Julia, I was showing her a picture of, I had frozen the screen on the DVD playback to show her that, and I brought up a picture from Marco Polo, and Julia was saying, "They don't look alike." I said, "Yes, they do."
Yeah.
Well, they would do. There's quite a few years in between, isn't it? Nearly 50, in fact.
Yeah.
No, same person. I will put one of my pictures and post to Facebook showing the comparison.
I'd agree, because Space 1999 was, 40 years ago, and she still looks quite similar to then as well, just the hair's gone a bit greyer.
Talking of Space 1999, though, isn't it funny when they to look at the fact that was supposed to be 1999 and what actually 1999 was like? And we're getting that scenario now, aren't we, with the Back to the Future 2, when they go forward in time and nobody's invented a hoverboard yet.
No, it's outrageous.
But they were nearly right with the 3D, you know, the man with the 3D Jaws. Movies. Obviously, Jaws is outside. But, I mean, there was a slight correctness in that particular idea. Anyway, back to Doctor Who. Sarah Jane Adventures. Stroke Doctor.
You know what I had an idea of? You know Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? You know the book? That just reminded me of the iPad for some reason.
What did?
The book, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, that's in the TV series. The idea of that book is a bit like the iPad.
But I said a few weeks ago, didn't I? Oh, sorry, a few episodes ago. Quite a few episodes. In fact, I think it was Nightmare in Eden when they had something that looked a bit like an iPad.
Yes, you did. Yeah, I remember that.
But I think they were using a stylus on it. But again, it's quite accurate predictions of future gadgets. Back to Sarah Jane Adventures.
Sometimes gadget. Oh, no. No reason, no.
So anyway, there's this wedding, and all these sort of random guests and canine are arriving.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So basically, canine has to hide under a table while this wedding starts.
Yeah,
the dog. Well, what did you think was under there? The wedding cake.
And then eventually, right at the end of the episode, she says something like, anybody knows any impediment, you know, blah, blah, blah. And the doctor comes flying through. Yeah. Stop the wedding. Of course, then we get to episode two, which is the episode everybody wants to see, because it's all basically a half episode of Doctor Who, because it's all, all the Doctor. And I love that episode. Apart from the fact I hate the character, the trickster, the way they've sort of brought the trickster to life. I don't mind the fact that he's got an upside down head. The dog is now knocking my microphone. He's going to get killed in a moment.
Because
I've put all my wires around in a place so he can't get to them, yet he's trying to get to them. The trickster. Right, I quite like the way they flipped his head upside down and created a monster that way, and in fact he hasn't got any eyes or whatever, and you know, that's fine, but the costume's terrible.
Hang on,
he's going to get murdered in a minute. He's tapping every single cable he can get his blooming paws around at the moment.
Why is the costume terrible? I rather like the costume.
No, I don't like
it. I didn't mind the white costume.
I didn't mind either one of them.
No, I don't like any of them.
I preferred the black one, to be honest.
Don't like any of them. Hang on. It's right on top of my microphone cable. Will you get off?
Because the guy's
get
so
off
tall.
It! Idiot! Get out of there!
I'm glad this didn't happen when Daphne was on.
Idiot!
Yes. Adam?
Yes?
Adam.
I'm surprised that. I've told you, there were several opportunities for innuendo, which... Oh, this dog is getting on my nerves now. opportunities for innuendo that Mary nearly created, and I was biting my lip. And listeners... Listening back, if you listen back to this podcast again, you will be able to find the bits where Daphne is saying stuff and Mary's saying things.
Saying that while I'm
and I'm
to
biting
the
my
show.
Lip. But there you go.
I'm just glad I don't have a mind like yours.
At least nobody brought up that other podcast that has interviewed Daphne before.
She has been on a couple of others as well, but I've decided to gloss over those.
Creatures podcast, anyway. I think a week or two ago, and that was pretty interesting.
Back to Sarah Jane Adventures stroke the Doctor Who.
Yeah, Adam.
Show. Yes. Ooh. Yes.
I think the costume doesn't work because the guy's so tall, and it's not really designed for a tall person. Do you think something like that?
I don't really know. There's something about it I don't like. I don't mind the fact that a bit it's the trickster, and the Doctor's mentioned the trickster before. In Doctor Who. And I like some of the things that have happened with... You know, some of the best stories have involved the trickster. This one isn't
can I ask,
the best.
Can I ask
trickster.
Something about the trickster?
Yes.
No. Yes.
Because I've recently read Love and War, which was a New Adventures story, you know, written when Doctor was off the air, and that featured a character called the Trickster. And I'm wondering whether that... sort of inspired the character of this trickster.
Who knows? Could have done. But and is that because somebody said that was the Celestria Toymaker one of the tricksters people? Somebody was one of the tricksters. One character, I can't remember now. That's amazing.
Isn't Love and War also a Big Finish story?
Love and War, possibly.
Yeah, Love and War. They recently did an adaptation.
I know what it was. It was in Turn Left, the little beetle thing. That was one of the Trickster's
brigade.
Well,
that's it, yeah.
Well, that was written by Paul Cornell, who wrote Love and War.
What? Turn Left? No, that was written by Russell C. Davis. What?
Sorry.
Anyway.
I'm thinking of...
Me too. Me too, Reese.
Basically, let's go back to episode two of this story.
Right? Father's Day, that's right.
Yes, you are, but never mind.
He turned left into the car, didn't he?
So basically, at the beginning of the episode, Sarah Jane and Nigel Havers disappear. The Doctor is left with Rani and Clyde and Luke and K-9. And it's lovely having that little crowd together. Yeah, I just that's why I mean the Trickster I can I can forgive because this, the way this episode the characters on this episode really work really well for me and I enjoy it. It's very brief, but I really enjoy episode two of this story. It's a bit cheesy and a bit.
I thought it was better than some of the Doctor Who episodes. It was cheesy, but it was a lot of fun.
It was fun, yes, exactly.
Yeah, yeah it was fun.
Yeah, hang on, the other dog's doing it now.
Yeah, and I'd agree, Reese. I like this better than some Doctor Who episodes.
Yes.
Yeah. So I like some of the lines about the Pantheon of Discord would be a good name for a band, and the Doctor goes, yeah, it's pretty good.
And I have to say that it's a shame that the character Clyde is not in on TV anymore because it's a really he's a really good character, he's a good little actor.
Yes,
I really miss him.
At the wedding, he was in a suit with the shoes, and it was cut like David Tennant's other suit, the brown one.
And also the fact that when he had that that energy, what was it called again? The energy in his
Ultron energy.
Ultron, and the fact that
I did not understand what it is he did to the Trickster with that Ultron energy.
Again, that was a silly thing. That's part true. Of it. Yeah, but yeah. I think it's temporal energy, wasn't it? Because it came from the
Mary.
TARDIS.
Yes,
Mary.
Yes.
Oh,
it's a TV show.
Oh, never mind.
Well, no, I was just saying that I don't understand what he did. I'm not saying he didn't do anything or that I didn't believe it. I just wondered what did he do. That's my question.
I think it was something to do with it was temporal energy, and it was quite good the fact that they used that as a link for when the Doctor came back in the Death of the Doctor. It was because Clyde still had it in him. The Doctor was able to get a fix on him, so it was quite good in a way that they were able to have the continuity there with that.
They did.
Will we review that one at some point?
Inevitably.
Yeah.
Inevitably.
Inevitably.
Okay.
Yes.
Inevitably. But inevitably. I mean, I sort of missed the story a little bit because I was so enjoying watching these characters on the screen for however brief time. Obviously, the Doctor back with K-9 and all that. Sort of stuff. So it was quite a simple. Oh, they'll just have them running around a bit, having a bit of fun together, and then Clyde will disappear, and Clyde will then save the day. And that was a bit silly. I must admit.
You know what I liked? Yeah, I liked the fact that the dead guy, or as he was supposed to be dead,
you've given him better. That
steady on.
Oh God!
God, he's setting off now.
Yes, back to the dead guy.
I was just thinking he was good because I haven't seen this episode before, and when I was watching it, I was thinking he's not an alien because K-9 said he's not an alien. He scanned him; he's a human being. I was thinking, how's he sort of doing this then? And then that's why I was fascinated for the story to unroll. I wanted to find out, you know, what was going on. So I thought it was,
I thought that side of it, worked really well. I didn't have a problem with the way that they did this because obviously the house was empty. It was because he was dead.
Yeah.
But he wasn't dead.
Yeah, I thought think they would have picked up on the fact that he was dead.
But I think
he would have thought they'd stop delivering the post.
Yeah. Well, maybe. Well, I was a milkman once, I got into trouble because apparently a house I was delivering milk to sent a letter to the depot saying that they didn't want any milk for a week or so, and I kept on dropping milk. And eventually, they had about 16 pints of milk on their doorstep. And they cancelled their milk, and I got told off because I said, "What?" They said, "Well, didn't you realise after there was like 8 pints there that they weren't going to be taking their milk in?" I was quite young at the time.
Well, Adam, what did you think?
What about this story?
No, about
the milk.
About the collection of milk, didn't
be
that
clue
you in?
Quiet. I was very young and naive.
Of which you speak.
Oh, shut up! Anyway, back to this episode.
Yeah, I just thought it odd that K-9 did not pick up on the fact that this was a dead person.
Yeah, but he wasn't properly dead. It's like that character, played by Jane Asher, who swapped places with Sarah Jane, which is a brilliant story again. She wasn't actually really alive; she was dead, but she was alive. Sorry.
Which one was that?
I can't remember what it's called, but it's where she makes a choice when she's hanging off the bridge. And,
the
says,
cliff. Yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's right. And she was young.
No, it was a pier. It was Penarth Pier. Yeah. And she basically swaps places. So Sarah Jane is dead, and this woman is completely
that was a
swapped
good
places.
One,
with
her. I like that episode.
Yeah,
you're very short, pier, Nettie.
Sorry?
Never mind, it's a goon show.
Thank you very much.
God. Did it strike anyone as odd that the little clip they were showing on the TV was the same in both both time signatures? And
no.
I would have thought one would have been a little
different. They were different seconds, weren't they?
Yeah, they should have been different seconds.
Never mind, it was a kid's science fiction fantasy TV show.
Also, it's even more of an excuse. It's a kid's TV show.
But anyway, so...
Well, do they think kids are stupid,
Yeah. Clearly. Yeah. Anyway, so clearly Clyde saves the day.
I think kids don't worry about
things. By the way,
the
other story we were thinking about was Whatever Happened to Sarah Jane.
That's the one.
In the first series.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah.
Isn't
that
the third one?
I won that DVD.
One of the odd things about that one is that the character's name who took over Sarah Jane's life was named Andrea Yates, and that was the name of a woman who here in the States drowned her children tragically.
It was kind of
weird.
Talking about some event that happened in the States, or something happened quite near one of you guys, wasn't it, on the news? Or some little boy shut down a shaft or down an underground prison by some strange man?
Yeah, he went underground bunker with the strange old man, yes.
Ooh, that was horrible.
You guys are breaking up again.
No, it's
well, you're going pretty well.
Well, I can
breaking
hear you.
Up is hard to
I don't hear anybody breaking up.
No, I don't hear it.
Yeah, Daphne's pretty well.
Daphne's breaking up, but never mind.
She's been breaking up for a while.
Back to this episode. I was trying to finish it off by saying that, you know, obviously Clyde saves the day, doesn't actually kill the trickster, but repels him, I suppose, back to where he belongs. And then we have that lovely scene in the attic where with the doctor, and they say, can they have a look inside? And he says, what, the TARDIS? TARDIS?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and they all look so properly cowed.
Yeah, they also have the scene just before that when the dead guy says goodbye to Sarah Jane, and he calls her Sarah Jane Dalton, and I cannot imagine the character of Sarah Jane taking her husband's name.
No.
It's just
no.
She would
the other way around.
No.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter though. Because it didn't happen, did it?
Yes, it does.
Everything was reset in good RTD style.
And when Nigel Habers first showed up wooing her, all I could think of is, oh my gosh, this guy has a set type. He plays these smarmy lovers.
He does. Yeah. Although when he was in his comedy TV show, he played a different, slightly smarmy, but very funny and a good character. Nowadays, that's what he does play.
Something I thought was interesting about the timbre of his voice was it was very John Pertwee-ish.
Yes.
Come to think of it,
I hadn't noticed that.
I didn't notice either.
Okay.
Go back and watch it.
I also like the scene where he first turns up at Sarah Jane's house and Rani, Clyde, and Rani's mum are all looking in that direction. They're looking at him and Clyde's looking at the car. They've all got this kind of longing look on their face for a few seconds. Ooh, he's a bit dishy. Nice car.
Yeah.
Now, like I say, this in the timeline of Doctor Who, this was the last story before we come to End of Time. Now, there was a reference to the Doctor's time coming to an end, wasn't there, which I might have slightly missed because I got a bit distracted while watching it. Did the trickster say something?
Yeah,
I think so,
What did he say?
I can't remember the line, but there was a moment where he said something and the Doctor's face went serious and there was dramatic music and it was literally like in the Planet of the Dead, your time will come, or whatever the line was. He will not four
I'll
times.
I'll find it, just a second.
Okay.
While he's finding it,
I had it on screen like 3 hours.
Well, he's Wikipedia, right?
The bit stuck in my mind is when Sarah Jane asked the Doctor, "Will I see you again?" and he didn't really answer, and he does see her again.
Yeah.
He does answer, but it's in a kind of a vague way.
I don't know.
But yeah, he doesn't say no. He just says, you know what, it's left that it's a possibility.
Yeah, but he does.
It's not a firm thing, yeah.
Have you found it yet, Kirby?
No, not yet.
Oh, that's unusual.
I think my description of something along the lines of he will not four times works.
Okay.
You know what Ian Kirk put on Facebook?
Yes.
The welding of K9.
Dear.
So while we're waiting for Kirby, like I say,
Oh my.
I liked the little slug thing.
What slug thing?
The trickster tells the doctor that the gate is waiting for him, foreshadowing the immortality gate in the end of time.
Cool. Anyway, back to the episode. Yeah, so we have that scene, and then it's bye bye. So, I think episode two saves it. Basically, I think that you could really do with that episode one. You don't need to watch episode. Yeah. If you want to get some enjoyment out of this story, although obviously there's a lot of build up to it, you can just watch episode two and absolutely love it for what it is.
I thought episode one was quite fun though.
Oh, it's okay. But it's episode two you want to watch. I mean, obviously the big difference
from this. This is the first full story of Sarah Jane Adventures I've seen, so I thought it.
How is it?
It went pretty well.
Really?
Yeah, it is.
That surprises me. It's a very, very good series.
It is. Yeah.
And this particular story is not by any way, shape, or form one of the better ones.
But it's very good, nonetheless.
It's okay. It's what Ben would say an episode is all right.
It's all right.
But obviously, having the doctorate makes it exciting.
It's all right.
Before watching this, I don't like sort of watching stories out of their order. I haven't seen series three before, so I started watching the other episodes before watching this. And there was a very good episode, was it the one before it or the one before the first one? I can't remember. But I thought it was really, really good.
Most of the stories are really good.
The one with Rani, when she... something happens to her. It was a bit like the episode with Clyde last.
Can you elaborate? What happened?
No, you know what? I can't remember. But you remember when Clyde was forgotten?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was brilliant. Yeah, Rani was forgotten. Rani was on her own. That's right. When she got there's nobody in the world
because they reject her or something.
Yeah.
They're not interested in her sleuthing, so she goes off. The response to this guy's email.
Yeah.
And to that amusement park.
No spoilers.
Oh, that one, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'd say, obviously, there's quite a few episodes of Sarah Jane Adventures. Series 1's okay. Pretty good. But series 2, 3, 4, excellent.
That CGI slug thing that they're chasing.
Yeah. I like the noise he was making. He was kind of going.
that was very kid friendly. That.
Yeah, well, yeah. Because it was a kids science fiction fantasy TV show.
Yeah.
But, like I say, I enjoyed it. As far as I'm not going to talk about episode one because that was a Sarah Jane Adventures episode featuring a bit of a hint of Doctor Who, and the Doctor right
there. That sounds.
But yeah. But episode two was all by all intents and purposes an episode of Doctor Who because it was mainly the Doctor and Sarah Jane's character was very much in the background.
Right.
So it was really good. I enjoyed it. Not obviously, if you look at it only as an episode of Doctor Who, it probably wasn't really that good. But I still love it. I think it's great.
It was good.
Yeah. I enjoyed it.
If it's made anybody want to go and watch the Sarah Jane Adventures, good. Cause,
it has, with me.
Yeah, we'll do it.
I have to say, Reese, I'm really surprised you haven't watched it.
He's been dismissive.
We used to review Sarah Jane Adventures, me and Alicia, many, many months ago. That was when
it's a series
podcast.
Aimed at kids, and Reese is way older than that. So, a kid at heart, maybe, but not one to watch kids'
shows. Of course, I started watching it because Sarah Jane was my favorite companion of all time. But my girls all loved the Sarah Jane Adventures. They used to always ask me when we were getting a new DVD and just...
Yeah. So, Reese, have you seen The Death of the Doctor?
You're talking about kids.
I've seen clips of it.
Oddly enough, my 18-year-old did not want to watch the wedding of Sarah Jane Smith with me because she does not like the trickster.
Oh,
he is pretty creepy. I just don't like his costume in this particular one. It looks like a cross between.
Like about.
Wait, it's his costume reminds me of those cat
nurses. Yes, it does. I was thinking that just when you said that.
Can't remember what they're called now.
Novice Hain.
Novices, that's it. Yeah.
Novice Haynes?
Well, there's a
Robert Haynes, did you say?
Cat costume. No, so there's kind of a nun look to the trickster's outfit. So yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's it then. That was.
I've got a very serious question about the whole show, though.
What Doctor?
Does
Who?
He say 13 Bannerman Road or Barrowman Road at the beginning?
Bannerman.
Very good. Yes. Delta and the Bannerman Road. Yes.
Yes.
That's better than mine.
Yes. So next week we'll be talking about the End of Time parts 1 and 2. Now we haven't got a lot of time. But I'm sure you'll all watch it because it's very watchable.
It is. Say. Hear that, Jeff? Yes. It's very watchable.
Yes, Jeff Waddell.
Oh, I found, should write I found in. the Sarah Jane story you were talking about, Reese. The Mad Woman in the Attic.
That's
that was
one.
Robin who was talking about it.
Yeah.
That's when, again, Elizabeth Sladen is amazing in that
episode. And the one of the things about that one is that the guy at that amusement park was played by Elizabeth Sladen's husband.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Brian Miller.
Brian Miller.
Indeed.
Brian Miller, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, never mind. Go back to what we were talking about.
I'm going
to
try and play some audio feedback without getting into trouble with She Who Must Be Obeyed, who's gone to sleep, and she told me to be quiet. When Daphne was on, she sort of mouthed the words, be quiet. So how I'm going to do this and be quiet at the same time, I do not know, but we have some audio.
Get ready, everybody. Destruction is near.
Oh, I do hope not.
Hold on to your laptop.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. This is Ian Kirk. Oh, by the way, my lipstick, it's deadly. Wedding of Sarah Jane Smith by Gareth Roberts. The street use for Bannerman Road is in Penarth, Wales.
Yes, I used to live there.
This was an enjoyable episode. I like the idea that they can be stuck in a one-second loop and the rest of the world moves on without them. To be pedantic, the TV seemed to be showing the same loop for both the Doctor and Sarah. Mm. This version of K-9 is a stair negotiation mode. A pity. I would have liked to have seen him using a stair lift. The resolution was a bit sudden. Clive gets some Artron energy.
Clive
is injured fighting the trickster, and Peter changes his mind. Yes, it turns out it was a trickster all along. And he would have got away with it too if it weren't for those damn kids. The trickster's influence makes it hard for the TARDIS to land. It makes a stuttering noise, as if it was using Robert Haynes' Skype connection.
Oh, very good.
The marriage laws have just been changed in the UK, but a woman still can't marry a zombie.
He will knock 4 times.
You're going to get me into trouble.
Bye for now.
Thank you very much, Ian, for
very good, Ian,
getting me into serious trouble. It could be any moment now this podcast comes to a very abrupt end.
Smash.
Yeah. Oh dear. I have had some other audio.
Adam, my favorite episode of your podcast is still when your wife is cleaning and getting rid of all your stuff. Oh yeah, well, check this out.
Oh yeah, yeah. Do you know who wrote the dialogue for that?
She did, didn't she?
Yeah.
No, I wrote it. Thank you very much. I'm a writer, you know.
Yep, that's still my favorite.
I thought she played the part very well.
She did.
Yes, she did.
And
very believable.
That was with very little rehearsal. Bless her. She's so lovely.
It was funny that episode, though.
She's a cuddly little thing. She is. Sorry, got a bit loved up there for a second. There. Right, there's some more. By the way, I'd just like to say, before you interrupted me, we got some audio from somebody called Dr. Phil Cerner. He has been known to drive while sending in feedback, which is a bit of a dodgy thing. I wouldn't recommend anybody to do, but he has sent something in, but it's got a review of End of Time on it, so I said we'll probably wait till next week, if that's all right.
Okay.
I've got another bit of
audio. Can we wait till the End of Time?
From somebody called... very funny. Somebody called Patrick Bishop.
Yes, we read that.
Oh, yay!
Excellent.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast. This is Patrick Bishop from North Hollywood, California, and I'm finally sending in my first feedback to the podcast. So, this week, I watched Sarah Jane Adventures, The Wedding of Sarah Jane.
Excellent.
Now, interestingly, I own all of the whole series, but haven't had time to watch many of the episodes. It was good that was this week's assignment, so to speak. I really was surprised at how well the story was. I wasn't expecting the Doctor to be in it. While viewing the first part of the two-parter, I was along the lines of thinking of how the kids were in the series, that Sarah Jane was actually investigating this guy as an alien, and I thought the romance was just a cover she was doing. As the story unfolded, and it turns out that she was really being courted by this man and really falling in love with her, I really enjoyed that part of the story and how it kind of doubled back on
forgotten about that.
Manipulating him instead. So all in all, I really liked the episode. I whipped through the two-parter in no time. I think it was altogether an hour, the whole story. Mm-hmm. It seemed like half that time. So that gives me encouragement to go and actually start watching some more episodes since I own them.
Go for it.
I also wanted to talk to you guys about next week, which is Gallifrey One convention, which
lucky
I'll be going
people.
To in Los Angeles.
No.
Last
year, I filmed some videos and posted them on YouTube.
You did. Thank you very much.
I'm going to do the same this year, and I'll be posting them to the Facebook group page.
Yes.
So hopefully you guys can check those
out.
Excellent. Great.
What I plan to do is daily is record some audio feedback about the convention and send it in.
Yeah.
So hopefully you guys can play it for next week. I'll try to be wandering around since I'll be bringing some audio equipment also. What I'm also going to try to do, if I can muster up the courage, is to approach some of the guests and get some audio bumpers for the podcast. To record you're listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Yes.
So wish me luck with that.
Cool.
So to wrap it up, I have to tell you guys that I love the show. I listen to probably 24 podcasts a week. A lot of them Doctor Who.
Not that many do it,
but a lot of them. And I have to say, the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is in my top three overall.
Thank you.
I really love each of your personalities. How it all comes together.
Does it?
How Mary keeps you guys sane.
Really?
Never saw that.
In check. When the dog's dinner is ready, and all the other 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast isms. So keep up the good work. This is Patrick Bishop from North Hollywood, California, signing off.
Thank you very much, Patrick.
Thank you, Patrick.
Some of the best feedback we've ever had. I sort of put a big smile on my face. That doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, egos really does work.
And Mary keeping us in line? What?
Oh, yeah.
She likes to think she does.
I'm quite glad he didn't say us contaminating Mary.
Mary's the innocent here. You guys are the ones always finding those innuendos.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I had to happen
Thank
at some
you, Patrick.
Point. Yeah, brilliant stuff.
Well, it's nice to have feedback, isn't it?
It is, yes. And if especially you want to send feedback into the show, you send it to 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. That's 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. We're sponsored by a sponsor, aren't we, Mary? Who is that sponsor?
Oh, no. Okay. It's whowon.co.uk.
It
Yay!
Is.
Yay!
But I reckon you've got Doctor Who magazine by you just to make sure you can read it out, and you should really have done it off by heart.
It's not a bad idea.
Did you hear the madly rustling papers there when you...
Yes. What is it? I'm on to you.
Where's Matthew this week, I wonder?
I don't know.
Oh, last week.
Matthew, where are you? In fact, where is anybody that hasn't sent in feedback to the show recently?
I hope he's not washing his phones again.
Washing his phone?
Yeah.
That's how he damaged his iPhone.
Did he?
Missed that invention.
Well, apparently,
I don't think he was actually washing his phone. It just fell into.
I don't think so either.
I think if you put your phone into rice, it cures it if it's being dipped in water problems. I don't know. It's a myth or what? But
not always. But I think
dry rice.
Not just my old iPod, but then something else happened to it, and then it stopped working.
And a good thing about that, of course, you can eat the rice afterwards.
Yes. If you want to.
iPod tasting rice.
Yes.
iPod flavored rice.
Have you noticed, so talk about latest products on whowon.co.uk, DWM457 has got a lovely picture of John Pertwee on the cover. It looks like it was taken yesterday. It's a lovely picture.
Yeah, I looked for that one at the bookstore yesterday and couldn't find it.
Oh. I last week got the DVD of Reign of Terror. I haven't watched it yet. I watched some of the extras on it.
Oh, Adam.
Mm?
I've already watched it.
Well, don't say anything, please, because I'd like to watch it. I just want to give myself, a period of time in which I can sit and watch the whole thing.
And I just wanted to say next time, because it seems to be as soon as you mention getting a DVD, that when I go out to the shops, it's there. So please keep on doing that.
Okay. Right. So I'd like to mention the DVD of The Tenth Planet, including the complete final episode of that particular.
Now I just picked up a used copy of
Dragonfire.
Sorry,
Dragonfire, but that's not used. That just came out. I found it in a used bookstore. So I guess someone got it and then sold it
last year. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. They probably watched it and then.
So I got okay. That's
hated it and.
Well, the thing is that I sat down with my two older girls last night and we watched it, and we liked it.
Yeah, good.
We both
something else. As the Ace Box.
Which one was again? Dragonfire? Did you say
Dragonfire?
Yeah, I like Dragonfire. Yeah. It's a bit silly when he decides to hang off the cliff with his umbrella.
Yeah.
But apart from that, it's quite a good story.
Other than that, we really enjoys it.
It's a clever concept as well, isn't it? The dragon is the,
Yes.
Anyway, I'm not going to do any spoilers.
And the girls, the girls didn't have any issues with the fact that the dragon was so obviously a guy in a suit and everything.
But that still happens in Doctor Who now, that a lot of
except
obviously
I did have to warn my 18-year-old that about the face melting.
She
turned away because that same thing bothered her in Raiders of the Lost Ark. So I knew about it in advance.
It's still quite an effective effect. That anyway, we'll probably talk about Dragonfire sometime in the future. So we'll move on. Of course, there's been some more. For that, Adventures in Time and Space. Sorry, Space and Time. Castings. The one that's... obviously, we've had the one we mentioned last week.
David Bradley.
Playing William Hartnell. But apparently, William Russell is going to be playing a character in it.
Really?
Cool. Now, that is cool. I don't know. That's what's the intriguing
thing. That must be confusing, because they've cast someone as him, but he's playing someone else as well.
Well, obviously, because it's when they're younger, though.
It says here, original Doctor Who cast member Rita Russell is to appear in a 50th anniversary drama, and Adventure in Space and Time. His agent reports that the actor will be playing the role of Harry. So I don't know who that is.
Sullivan? No.
Not Harry Sullivan.
No other details of the character are known at present. It's probably just a little cameo, I expect, but it's lovely that they're going to have him in there.
Yes,
So the cast...
It is a show about time travel, though.
The casting so far is this, or thus, depending on how to pronounce it. William Russell, David Bradley, Verity Lambert, Jessica Raine, Sidney Newman, Brian Cox, Waris Hussein, Sasha Dohun, Sasha Darwan, I suppose is probably right. William Russell, Jamie Glover, Jacqueline Hill, Gemma Powell, and Carol Ann Ford, Claudia Grant. Who's fidgeting?
Not me.
Reese?
Not me.
Not me.
Somebody was.
I'm just sitting here
reading along with Adam.
Yes?
Adam. No, I just said Adam, I'm sitting Adam. Here reading along with you.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I better close down the U-Porn page then, just in case you're on that one as well. Anyway, an adventurous.
Mary.
I tell you. Who keeps who in line here? Who keeps who in line?
Yes.
Okay, DVT schedule confirmed till September. Here we go. Are you ready? 25th of February.
I can tell you something about
it. Be quiet. I'm just about to announce it. Tell me about it afterwards. Right, here we go. 20th of February. Oh, now you've made me cock it up. Oh, teeth in.
Right. 25th of February.
Right. 25th of February, the Ark in Space Special Edition. 11th of March, Aztec Special Edition. I wonder what they're going to do when they decide that they want to release them again and make even more money. Are they going to call it the Aztec Special Edition? But I've got to get the Aztecs one. Edition? I've got to get the Aztecs one. Darn. Because it's got Galaxy 4 reconstruction on it.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Extra special.
Not reconstruction, the missing episode that they found.
Yeah, well, it says reconstruction here.
That's the reason I'm going to have to get it.
Exactly. 6th of May, Visitation Special Edition. 27th of May, Inferno Special Edition. What was wrong with the previous version?
Can't
say.
3rd of June, Mind of Evil at last. 24th of June, Terror of the Zygons at last. 15th of July, the Blu-ray of Spearhead from Space. Again, I've got to get it, because it's a Blu-ray.
Yeah.
5th of August, Green Death Special Edition. 26th of August, another got to get the ice. What was that?
There goes the Thunderbirds 4.
See, this is what was happening when we were trying...
FOB, we were trying down.
Yeah, we were trying to listen intently to Daphne, and all we heard was things falling over in the background. Where's Magic?
I think you heard Magic flap.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Yes, I heard him flap his ears.
Magic, Reese just... Shush. Reese just called you a girl. Oh, dear. He's not happy with you now, I tell you. All right.
Well, guess what? A dog on the other side of the world. Not scared. Oh, okay. Pretty scared. I just brought up the page about DVD releases.
You shouldn't
eat DVD releases.
Well, you shouldn't eat it then, should you?
What?
You shouldn't eat it then. Then you wouldn't have to bring it.
Dragonfire was in an Ace Adventures box set in Region 2.
That's what I was saying.
They were sold individually here in Region 1 because you confused me there.
Okay. Can I continue with this list?
Yeah, but you can take the individual DVDs out of the box set anyway and sell them separately.
Yeah,
so.
All right.
Yeah, but this was in its own case. This is just the case.
Yes, they do have their own cases, though.
Oh, be quiet.
Yeah, they do have their own cases within the box.
All right, shush. Right, 26th of August, Ice Warriors. 16th of September, Scream of the Shalka. There ends my list.
Yeah, you know what I was going to say about the DVDs is that Babel Color... The guy who does, you know, the videos.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He was just mentioned on his Facebook page the other day that he just finished colorizing Mind of Evil. You know how it's only been available in black and white with only that little clip of color at the end of the VHS. But he's also talking about Terror of the Zygons. Apparently there's going to be a director's edition or something as well with it.
Good.
Or director's cut or whatever. So I don't know whether they restored some scenes that have been missing or something that was originally intended.
Well, I look forward to seeing that.
That's one I haven't seen since the 80s, so I have no idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, didn't you do it when we did the review of it?
Terror of the Zygons?
Yeah.
We didn't do a review of it.
We did, didn't we, Adam?
Possibly. I can't remember.
I don't have it, and it's not available on DVD, so no.
I'm sure you were on it, Kirby. I'm sure you were. It's weird.
Anyway, back to news.
Let me Google this.
Anyway, Destiny of the Doctor, Vengeance of Stones, written by Andrew Smith, friend of the show.
Hi, I'm Andrew Smith, and you're listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Starring Richard Franklin and Trevor, with Trevor Littledale, released on the 7th of
is
March.
Is that a book, is it?
I think it's like a CD audio thingamajig.
Oh, okay. It would be Companion Chronicles, maybe.
Like a sort of mixture between a novel and a bit of drama. It's a bit like that thing that Richard Franklin
did with the Companion Chronicles.
The Destiny of the Doctor is that series that Big Finish is doing, one every month, you know, one every Doctor. And so for March, it'll be Pertwee because he's the third Doctor.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's more of a story read. It's not an audio drama.
Cool.
But that's what they do with the Companion Chronicles as well. They have the character reading out what's going on.
Yeah. I suppose that's about it, really, isn't it? A shame we haven't really had much to do on this episode. It's been a very quiet one.
Nothing at all. This is very
uneventful.
Boring.
Uneventful episode of the 20 Megabyte Podcast.
Yeah, it was number 48.
What, this episode? No, you're wrong. It's 151.
No. It says, this week, with Alicia out of Axon, Kirby Violet Sloane kindly steps in to help out with news and look at comic relief mini-episode Space and Time. Ben and Adam talk Terror of the Zygons, which is enhanced
Ben and Adam,
by my feedback.
Not me.
Yeah. No, enhanced by my feedback. So yeah, I did remember doing it, but yeah, you were on that show because you helped out with news and look at comment relief.
Pedantic moment of the week.
That was episode 48.
Now, if I was on live with that one, I certainly couldn't have provided any feedback because I haven't seen it since.
Never mind.
I didn't know that the show had done it. Yes.
Right. Are we recording next Sunday or next Monday? I'm completely lost.
Oh, God. Sunday would be best for me.
Sunday.
Yeah, see, Kirby is the one who's kind of dictating the schedule with his with his life.
So, Sunday, is it? And then we're back to Monday week after that. Is that correct?
All right.
That would be fine by me, but don't let me dictate things.
All right, how does everybody else feel about this?
Now, the last time we tried to rearrange it, you gave a long lecture about why you couldn't do that.
Yeah.
So what happens if we do it not next month, Sunday, but next Monday? Then what happens? How does that fit into everybody else's lives, including yours, right, Kirby?
Either one works for me.
Okay.
Same here.
When are we doing the end of time? Sunday?
It'll either be Sunday or Monday, depending on what we decide. I don't want to turn this into the what time are we going to do the podcast.
I can do it either day.
Right, so Mary, how are you for Monday then?
Well, Monday I would just be on for an hour, but that's all right.
Do it Sunday then.
It's all right.
It's all right, we can do it Sunday.
Okay, should we do it Sunday
then?
We'll
just be sleepy.
Okay, right, next week we'll do it Sunday, then we'll go back to Monday the week after that. Yeah?
Cool.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Until the time changes.
Yeah,
and then we better do it a month of Sundays.
That's what she said. Right, so next week, obviously, we're doing the end of time, and also we have some audio feedback from Dr. Philip W. Cerner. Look forward to that. And can we have some other bits of feedback, especially from Mr. Patrick Bishop, who seems to be a bit of a dab hand at the feedback thing, and Mr. Ian Kirk, and whatever happened to Jim
Kressel,
the fish, Matthew Kressel, and anybody who hasn't sent any feedback in yet.
Congratulations to Southampton for winning.
Oh, absolutely. Tosha Bingham.
That made the news here, Adam. Did you know that?
Yeah, you're being sarcastic. Made the news here.
No, I'm not. It did make the news. I'm serious.
We have won other games this season, you know. It's only because we beat Manchester City, who are the Premier League champions.
Adam.
Yes.
Adam. Do you listen to the Saccharine Stories podcast?
I mean to, but I just keep forgetting.
Because they were making fun of the Isle of Wight in their most recent one.
And Australia.
Ooh. And Australia at the same time.
Well, in that case, really I'm quite glad I didn't listen to that podcast.
It was some direct dig at Reese.
Was it?
They say.
It was a direct dig at New Zealand and Australia, apparently being really close, just as close as the Isle of Wight is to England, but well, the rest of England, but no, it's not really.
No, I think the gap of water between us and Portsmouth is no more than a mile.
Exactly. That's a tad smaller than the gap between Australia and New Zealand.
The gap between us and France is more like... Ooh, what was that?
That's my bread machine. I have to unplug it.
I wonder what that smell was. About 75 miles.
You need to unplug it.
God. Anyway, that's it. I'm losing the will to live, and I've got a lot of editing to do between now and whenever I can get this podcast out. So until then, until next week, thank you for listening and joining in, as far as you're concerned, to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. See you again next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
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 Who podcast is an APB Services production, sponsored by whoone.co.uk, and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.
Hey, I have a question for all of you who own these special edition DVDs. That's just a story, I know.
42, yes.
I have, from my library, I have the Doctor Who movie, which it says on disc one there are commentaries, but I put disc one in, and I can't seem to access any commentaries. They don't even list anywhere.
Go to audio options.
Yeah, it's audio options.
Oh, is it audio options? Is that what I'm missing? Oh, I knew if you could direct me to it.
If you press the subtitle button on your remote control a few times...
Not the subtitle. That will give you the infotext. Oh, yes.
I get the infotext.
Press the audio option.
True, yeah.
Audio options will bring it up.
The audio button. Sorry.
Or we could have started playing it when Daphne was on, and we could have had a live commentary.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Anyway, dinner is ready, so I need to run downstairs. So I'll talk to you guys next week.
Hey, Kirby, my breakfast is ready.
Me too.
Breakfast.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye. Bye.